sorry that for the inconvenience of this thing, but I just tend to operate most of the time with one of these if I'm in this kind of situation. In fact, in 6 weeks' time, my daughter's getting married, and how I'm going to do a speech without one of these at the wedding, I'm not quite sure.
Well, you could use that.
Yeah, I could. Sorry, I missed that. I could work. Yeah. Some of yours. So, incidentally, the appeal was made for squash earlier on. I noticed coming up here, there's also just around the corner a golf driving range. So, if anyone wants to join me this afternoon, they're very welcome.
Has anybody brought a tennis racket? No, you can't drive golf balls.
What I want to do this morning is a kind of critical analysis. I hope that's not too off-putting. But actually, I find that with a lot of Christians, they really do not ask the right kind of questions about what is happening. So I really want to be looking at this question of the essential ingredients for growth, because I do believe that God is wanting to see things grow. And somebody's defined various Christian organizations and churches under this kind of category. There are those who say, are we doing things? Doesn't matter what we're doing, as long as we're doing things. Others who are sort of saying, are we doing things the right way? Others who are saying, are we doing things in the right places? And a very small minority who actually say, what is it we're actually trying to get done? So it's in that kind of area. And what I want to do is to just highlight certain aspects of growth, look at the hindrances and things like that, and maybe you can relate to some of these, and maybe we'll have opportunity to ask or question, and then there's others who can contribute into all that. So let's start by looking at this question, the essential ingredients for growth. And I want to define what we're talking about in terms of areas of growth. First, there is individual growth, that is growth in maturity. I believe that it is the responsibility of every Christian leader not only to be growing in maturity himself or herself, but also that they, as Paul says in Colossians 1:28, that he labored with all intensity in order to present everybody mature in Christ. That is, that they are able to be responsible people themselves and not having others take responsibility for them. That they know who they are and they're able to take responsibility for their lives and in God. So that's individual growth. Secondly, corporate growth. That is growing up together. Not just growing together, but growing up together. And Ephesians 4:11 on to 16 shows you there a picture of a church which is growing up together and reaching the stature of the fullness of Christ. And then thirdly, numerical growth. That is growing in size. If you read through the book of Acts, at various phases, I think there are 6 or 7 phases, you'll get the little expression like in Acts 9:31 where it talks about and the church had rest and grew. And each phase of the church's development, it's summed up with talking about the church having grown actually in numbers. So when I'm talking about the essentials ingredient for growth, I want to be looking at these three areas. First, individual growth, growth in maturity. Second, growth, corporate growth, and third, numerical growth. Now, the three are linked and dependent on each other, and they're consequential. What I mean by that is this, that individual growth should lead to corporate growth, should lead to numerical growth. But they're not only consequential, they also should be concurrent. Right? They should be going on at the same time. You don't reach a stage with a church and you say, okay, we've had the individual growth bit, now we're into, you know, the corporate growth, and now we've got that, now we're into t'other. They should be happening concurrently. But there are times when emphasis is needed on one particular aspect. Okay, so the things, they should be going on all the time, but it may well be that in your fellowship, you may think, well, you may feel God is saying, we need to concentrate on this particular aspect for 6 months, a year, or whatever. Is that clear? You're all with me at the moment. Fine. Now, I want to start with a definite premise, which I think we really need to grasp. And that is that growth is natural. We have been living in the kingdom over many, many years where growth has not really been taking place in the churches. And we have almost imbibed, and it's also almost part of our thinking, that growth somehow is unnatural. We have been thinking in terms of the remnant attitude. You know, that this terrible world around us is going to encroach and we're going to be under such pressure, and it's up to us to maintain the witness until the Lord comes and takes us out of all this. And we've got to hold on. Well, we have got to hold on, but it's in that kind of lack of growth mentality. The siege mentality that was referred to in the last session. That somehow growth is unnatural. Now, if you read the parables of the kingdom in Matthew 13, for example, the sower, the mustard seed, and the yeast, you'll see there that the ingredients for growth are present within. In other words, you in your fellowship have not got to be looking somewhere for the ingredients for growth. They are present within. It's almost like people who are looking for love. You know, when I get to that place in terms of love, when I get to that area, that resource of love, then everything. And God says that He has shed the love abroad, a love of God abroad in our hearts. Present tense, He has already done it. And it's not a question of sort of finding it there, it's a question of releasing it from here. And in exactly the same way, the ingredients for growth are present within your fellowship. Now start with that. When the disciples, Jesus looked at the multitude and said to the disciples, well, first of all, the disciples said, look, send them away in order that they may get food. And Jesus said, you give them to eat. Panic. And they said, if we had 200 penny worth of bread, would that be sufficient? You know, it's the if only mentality. If only we had more of this, if only we had more of that, if only we had more of the other, then we might be able to do something. And what Jesus said was, well, what actually have you got? And strangely enough, what they had got, given over to the Lord, was quite sufficient to meet the particular demand that was being placed upon them. Now that's where I start from. I actually believe that the ingredients for growth are within, that God has given to you sufficient resources for you to meet the demands that He is placing upon you. I believe that. That's my starting point. And so I don't tend to live in an if-only mentality. If only we had more full-time workers. If only we had more gifted people. If only we had somebody who could lead worship. If only this, if only that. The answer is, God has given you sufficient resources to meet the demands that He wants you to meet at this particular point in time. And if He wants you to meet bigger demands, then the resources will be there. Now that's where I start from. I believe that the ingredients for growth are present within. The church is an organism, which means that it has ability to grow and reproduce. It has a life force within it, which is power to reproduce. That is the principle of life force, right? It has power to reproduce. Anything that has life in it has power to reproduce. And secondly, there is a life principle. And the life principle is that it reproduces like kind. Right? It's maybe rather dull, but it's a fact that if you plant seeds of carrots, what you actually get are carrots. It might be nice to get potatoes if you plant carrots or whatever, but it doesn't. It reproduces of its kind. Okay? So that is the principle. And the principle that Jesus has used in parables of the kingdom, and the principle right there throughout Scripture, is that within the church there is not only the life force, but the life principle. It will produce, reproduce, and it will reproduce like kind, not something different. And so when we see the early church, if you like, the seed of the church, there is the life force and the life principle. So there is actually no reason on earth or in heaven why we cannot be reproducing like character. Because it's the same life principle and the same life force is there. It's like I read in the paper just this last week that they found in a Chinese tomb seeds that were 2,000 years old. They'd been lying there sort of dormant. 2,000 years. They planted them and they found that they were tomatoes. They got tomatoes from it. 2,000 years been lying dormant, but still the life principle was there and the life force was still there within the seed. Now that is true for the church also. Okay? And therefore, where we start from, if we're thinking about growth, or ought to be thinking about growth, the ingredients are already there. And growth will take place if conditions for growth are present and hindrances to growth are removed. Okay? Growth will take place, providing the conditions for growth are there and hindrances to growth are removed. Now, if we really started from that point and believed that point, you know, conditions for growth in your own personal life, in corporate life, in terms of fellowship, and in numerical size, are already present within. And growth will take place as a matter of course, right, if the conditions for growth are met and the hindrances to growth are removed. Now, I hope that encourages you and blesses you. I believe it. That's what I've experienced. Now, then let's go on a little from there and look at these individual aspects. First of all, looking at individual growth. And I want to ask a question here before we start. And the question is, am I growing? That is, am I growing in maturity and ability? Are others growing? I believe, brothers and sisters, that this is a question that leaders need to be asking themselves. We often ask the question of individuals within our fellowship, but the question is really, are you growing in maturity and in ability? A leadership work will grow no further than its leadership. Okay, it will rise no higher in its spirituality, or its zeal, or its commitment, or its vision than leadership. And I find that so often with leaders, that once they get into a position of leadership, that actually they stop growing. That they don't put themselves in a position where they're able to grow and to mature. Now, as I said to a group at Pilgrim Hall some little while ago, when Jesus came and washed the feet of the disciples, Peter said, "Oh no, you're not going to wash my feet." And Jesus said, "If I don't wash your feet, you have no part in me." And what Jesus was saying here, Peter, your future ministry is not going to depend upon your willingness to minister to others, but your willingness to receive ministry. Okay? Now, we're good at ministering to others. Are we good at receiving ministry from others? And the extent to which you will minister is the extent to which you are being ministered to. It's the old question that the barber is asked, well, who cuts your hair? And I'm sorry, but leaders are the worst kind of people for receiving ministry. They're just not in the position where they're able to receive ministry. Very often they put themselves in that kind of position for all kinds of reasons. Right. So are others growing in maturity and in ability? Am I? Now, it's always very difficult to measure growth, isn't it? It's like your kids. They grow up and you don't actually see them grow unless you actually put marks on the wall or something like that to see them actually growing. Other people say, oh my, haven't they grown? You say, have they? I haven't noticed. So how do we kind of measure growth? Just one thing on this. Very often we measure growth from where people are to where we feel they ought to be. A more realistic appraisal is from where they are, from where they've come from. Now, if you measured the Corinthian church, for example, from where they were to where they ought to be, you think, good night, who could do with those? I could do with that lot like I could do with a hole in the head, you know. But if you measure from where they were to where they'd come from, it was quite a big measure. Right? So the question that we need to be asking when we're looking at growth in terms of individuals, not just where they are to where they ought to be, but where they are to where they've come from. Is there any growth? The question that we need to be asking ourselves if we're growing, where I am, where I've come from. And if you're not sure of that, ask somebody. Ask somebody in terms of maturity, in terms of your life, over the past year, you know, have you seen me grow in every area? And ask them to be brutally honest about it, not just sort of kind of all the things you ought to say. Right, let's look at stimulus for growth, first of all. Growth will take place in the right environment. And that environment needs to be love. Any child will grow and mature when it's in the security of unconditional love. Love and security. Example. Most children, when they grow up, they learn from example. They try to do what their parents do, or their older brothers do, or older sisters do. And so there is a very real element of example. Now, I just want to read you an encouraging little verse of Scripture, which I want you to take home, read out to your fellowships when next you see them. Okay, will you do that for me? This is a verse. It's Philippians chapter 4 and verse 9, and this is what Paul says. Whatever you have heard, whatever you've learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Okay? So go back to your fellowships. Say to them, now look, folks, whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Simple, isn't it? Or else you could go back and say, don't look at me, look at Jesus. Which sounds nice, but it's the biggest cop-out that we've ever sort of done. So we learn by example. We learn by training. That means making mistakes. And if you in your fellowship and the people in your fellowship don't feel that they can make mistakes, you've got problems. Right? Now, I'm not saying that you should encourage mistakes, but unless they feel able to make mistakes, they won't move. The right kind of food, the right kind of diet. And then, of course, there's experimentation. There's learning to try these things out. And this is where the mistakes come in. This little baby, Rachel, bless her, she's going to experiment. She's experimenting now. She's trying to crawl. Later on, she's going to walk. She'll fall down. She'll make mistakes. That has happened. Somebody will be there to pick her up and try again. That's experimentation. Now, that all those sort of things and encouragement, all those things are necessary stimulus, a necessary environment if growth is going to take place. If that environment is not right, growth will not take place. If people feel that if they try something and they fail, that they're going to get criticized publicly, or they're going to be up before the elders, or you know, and clobbered and everything. What will happen? People won't make mistakes. People won't do anything. They'll be frightened of doing anything. They'll be frightened of giving a word on a Sunday morning because, you know, the pressure of it all. If there's not love, you see, people will stay where they are. They'll stay entrenched in their own little sort of defensive position where they don't feel vulnerable. And they won't come out. The hat rack will still remain with nothing on it because they want to stay where it's safe. So it's absolutely vital that the right environment is created in order for individual growth to take place. Secondly, strategy for growth. Is there strategy for individual growth, for your growth and for others? For example, has groups, new Christians, leaders, so on and so forth. There has to be strategy for growth. You have to provide for it, although the ingredients are there. You take a little seed. You have to have a certain strategy. You have to plant it. You know, it has to be nurtured. It has to be developed. And really, I find that so often, you know, if growth takes place, it's almost in spite of, because of, you know, not because there's actually provision made for it or strategy made for the particular thing. So strategy for growth. Is there strategy in what you are doing for your individual growth so that you can grow? And is there strategy for others? Is a strategy about the way that you order your meetings or the meetings provided or whatever, strategy for people's growth? Now let's look at hindrances to growth here. First of all, sin, a point of disobedience in a person's life. Now it's not just a question of being forgiven, but it's a question of turning that point of disobedience into a place of obedience. Right? Otherwise, that person's growth will be stunted. That person will not grow past that point. And I've seen people very often come up against something, duck the whole thing, only to meet it down there. You know, I talked to one particular lady. We'd been seeing her for months and months and months. And I said to her, look, it was a question of forgiving her husband. I said, wherever we come at this thing, it's like tunneling through a mountain that sooner or later you hit solid rock. It doesn't matter whether we start there, start here, we still come across the same strata of rock. You know, we talk about all different things. And I said, until you blast through that rock, and basically that rock was her willingness to choose to forgive her husband, I said, we're going to make no progress whatsoever. Yeah. Secondly, hurts. This is in the emotional area particularly. I think one of the difficult things is that we do hurt each other, don't we? And we get hurt. We expect the world to clobber us. But somehow when it comes from Christians, it really does. It's a blow below the belt, isn't it? And we get hurt. I have been terribly hurt over the past few years. I was talking to Alan. I feel when I left the Millmead situation, I feel as though I've been through a divorce. You know, you cannot be involved in cleaving to people and then leaving without a great tearing taking place. And if you can leave without any pain, then there's been no cleaving in the first place. You know, and we get hurt. Things that are said, you know, remarks that are said. And I mean, I was talking, I had to go and minister to a leader and his wife. And he'd given up a very, very profitable job in the bank to go full time with his fellowship. He got three little children, and his wife was expecting another child. and somebody came up and just patted her on the stomach and said, another mouth will have to feed. You know. Now, you know, that just went straight down, you know, and that hurt. And what happens when we hurt is what we retreat in like a little snail inside a shell. And the problem with that is we're nice and safe in there, but it does mean that from that on, as long as we're in there, we're not going to make any progress. You know. And when you've stuck your head out and you've been clobbered and you go back inside the shell, it takes an awful lot to be able to stick your head out again. Because you're waiting for somebody to clobber you again. And really, there are so many things that have happened in our lives, in the past, way, way back in the past, maybe in our childhood, we deal with things like that, and maybe just in the present, of where we've got hurt, that hurt has not been ministered to and dealt with by the Lord and healed, and what it does is it affects our growth. So we need to deal in this area. Thirdly, bondages, fears, sins, habits, where we're in bondage to those sort of things, particularly fears and anxieties. You know, what happens with a little girl, a little child who believes that in that cupboard in her bedroom is a bogeyman? So she will not go into that room, or she will avoid that cupboard because of a fear of the bogeyman. Now, you may know there's nothing in that fear. It's totally irrational. But to her, in that cupboard is a bogeyman. And until some mummy actually takes her by the hand and very gently leads her and opens the door, and where she discovers that her fears are totally unwarranted, until that happens, that child's life and the what she does will be motivated by avoiding that cupboard. That will happen. And I was talking to somebody the other day, just this past week. Her biggest fear was not rejection or anything else, but what rejection says. And what rejection said to her was that she was not valuable at all. And so all her life, she was avoiding this, her worst fear, that she may discover that actually she was of no value whatsoever. And so whole of her life was motivated by that. And that was a fear that had been implanted by Satan and had become a real bondage to her, which we had to deal with in her life. Fear, sins, habits. And then the fourth area, the demonic, the contact with the occult, etc. Those are four areas, rough areas, that we need to look at in terms of hindrances to growth. And the hindrances needed to be identified, and we really need to be dealing with the root and not the fruit. You know, so often we're dealing with the fruit, and we're not really dealing with the root behind it. We always want to ask the question behind the question. Okay. In other words, the problem, to me, the problem is not so much rejection, because we're all going to face rejection, but it's what rejection actually says. You know, rejection may say, for example, that you're of no value. That only confirms your worst feelings, you're of no value. Or that you deserve to be punished, or whatever. You know. So we always need to actually be dealing with the root of the problem and not the fruit of the problem. Secondly, ministry is needed. And be careful here, because we need to be meeting needs, not feeding them. Okay? And there are some people that, in the dealing of the whole situation, all we're doing is feeding people's needs rather than meeting people's needs. Now, the difference between meeting a need and feeding, I'm sorry for those of you who've got big cars, but it's the only way I can illustrate it. You see, I might have a need of a car to get from A to B. That's all I need, is something with an engine and four wheels, basically, to get me there to there. That, and to meet the need, I have a car. Now, to feed a need, maybe because, you know, I lack status or prestige or value or something else like this, suddenly it's no longer just a car to get me there, but it becomes a status symbol and everything else like that. Then it becomes feeding a need, not just meeting a need. You see what I mean? And there are people in our fellowship, and it can be for leaders as well, right? where the situation is feeding a need rather than meeting a need. So a leader has feelings of insecurity, and so he's desperate for authority and recognition and all the other things, not actually to meet his need, but to feed it. You with me? And we need to be meeting needs, not just feeding them, if we're going to grow. And then nextly, that healing need to be walked out. We need to be taking action to rectify the situation. I mean, for example, this particular girl who was in bondage to this fear that she had of being of no value. We had to minister to that fear. But then I said to her also, look, you need your mind renewed because you have lived with this lie all your life. And that lie has said this. Now you need your mind renewed. I was thinking yesterday when we were talking, I used to do a lot of schools work and visit schools for a week at a time. And when I went to the school, I would go and visit the headmaster. And I'd knock on the headmaster's door. And what would happen in my heart and mind was I went right back to my childhood when I used to knock on headmaster's doors, which was very often a very painful experience for me. It left a painful impression on me. And I immediately became a little boy. And I had to say, wait a minute, he has got no authority over me whatsoever. You know, and I would have my mind renewed and I'd go in and I'd face him not as a little child, but as a grown person who was coming in the name of the Lord, and I never got refused an invitation into any school that I went and visited the headmaster first. And people used to say then it was impossible. I did it, used to do it regularly. Now, you know, I just had to renew my mind on the whole sort of thing. And what happens, you know, Satan, who's had authority on our life or something like that, he says, but you always do that, don't you? You say, oh yeah. And you go along with it. Because of all the way that you've lived before under his domination. You have no need to. You know, you need your mind renewed. I don't have to. He says, you always do it. Nuts. You know, and walk out the healing. Action taken to rectify and restore. Now, the overemphasis. If you overemphasize individual growth, these are some of the things that will happen. A self-centeredness, introversion, a distortion of the gospel. It becomes man-centered rather God-centered. And I know this has been happening in the kind of circles that we mix in. I asked some people the question, are you wanting God to fulfill your life, or are you wanting your life fulfilled in God? Now, the difference between the response of that is, for a person who wants God to fulfill their life, they are still at the center of things. And if you say, I want to find my life fulfilled in God, God is at the center of things. And the emphasis of teaching that we've had in our fellowships has been largely missing. It has been now-centered words which tend to operate towards people's needs and keeps people at the center rather than God at the center. It's become subjective rather than objective. The emphasis of gifts have tended to be more towards individualism and what it does in our kind of situation. The Ian Andrews meetings in Guildford that were heavily oversubscribed. I'm quite sure that if it had been something that was basically on evangelism, it would be heavily undersubscribed. But that's where, you know, we are. We have been brought up in a consumer society, which is basically gimme, you know. Now, underemphasis is going to mean a failure to mature and to take responsibility, weak leadership, lack of corporate and numerical growth. We will be developing what I call the old woman who lived in a shoe. She had so many children, she didn't know what to do, right? Now, she was doing all this work of comforting the people, of feeding them, sort of wiping away their tears and encouraging them, and all in unsuitable accommodation. And, you know, that was her problem. And her problem was not to get a bigger boot or to import a father figure, because there was no father figure around. The problem was they were all kids. If they were all mature beings, they would be able to take the responsibility for running the shoe. You know. And the problem so very often in our churches is we have underemphasized the need for individual personal growth, and we end up with people who are failing to mature or take responsibility, weak leadership because the leadership isn't growing anyway, and a lack of corporate and numerical growth. Now let's have a look at corporate growth, that is growing together, and looking at stimulus for growth. First of all, the right environment in which corporate growth can take place, and that is relationships. We are told to love one another as Christ loved us, to accept one another as God has accepted us in Christ, and to forgive one another as God has forgiven us in Christ. Okay? In other words, you work from back to love each other as Christ has loved us. How did Christ love me? Unconditionally, without any strings attached. He's accepted me. How's he accepted me? One package deal. He hasn't accepted the nice points or the gifts or anything else. I come in one package deal, folks. You can't have part of me. This is what I am. Yeah. And yes, I have got insecurities. And yes, at times I want to control and be domineering. That's part of the package deal that I come in. I'm not proud of those. Those things need to be worked at and everything else. But that's part of the package deal. To accept one another. To forgive one another. And then the stimulus for growth is interaction of life together. If you read in Acts 2, 42 onwards. In the church there was a tremendous interaction of life together. And if we're going to grow corporately, there has to be the right environment for that to take place. And if there is not interaction of life together, there will not be corporate growth. It's as simple as that. And the worship, praise, worship, and witness flows out of that life together. Okay? It's an outflow of that. And so if it is not happening, there will not be an outflow. Worship is not an event, it's a lifestyle. And we have tended to make it an event. It's got to come out of something. If I can go a little bit historical now. You see, before we've reached a stage in our society that we've got to, British society was rather a rural society. It was a small village society. And what happened was right in the middle was the church. And worship on Sundays was an extension of relationships that happened during the course of the week. That's the way it happened. Now, with the Industrial Revolution and the spread of urbanization, the urban sprawl, what happened was that people started coming together on Sunday who had no previous real relationship. And so worship then became a very individualistic, and you came wrapped in your own special cocoon of aura. And you nodded to the person either side very quietly. And then you got into your worship. And to really make, and we even spiritualized it. The more holy you got, you closed your eyes. And then you could cut out everybody. And at the end of the meeting, you were allowed a little bit longer to actually converse. But you didn't converse at any depth, you know, but you conversed. So we not only got into it, we spiritualized the whole thing, and we made it something glorious. Now, praise the Lord, God's been doing something, we trust, amongst us, and those sort of things don't figure so important. But you know, we've got, worship needs to be an extension of relationship, and witness needs to be an extension of that as well. The use of gifts and ministries, the fivefold lot in Ephesians 4:11, which you'll know about, and thirdly, the development of gifts and ministries as well amongst us. It is no good talking about corporate life if our structure and the way that we operate do not enhance that. For example, I went to a fellowship with a friend of mine way, way up north, and he said, we've been trying to get the people to take part and become body life. And I went to his meeting, there was a platform, there was a table, there was a leadership, and there were the people. And I said, how on earth are you going to encourage body life with that kind of structure? Because what it is saying is, here are the experts, here are the guys who know, you know, and here are us. You know, that's what it's saying, and they were teaching one thing, but what was being projected by what they were doing was something quite different. And then they wondered why it wasn't happening. We need to structure in order to develop and encourage ministries and provide the right kind of environment. So there needs to be strategy for corporate growth. Now, the hindrances, the social environment, the social, which I've mentioned, the spread of urbanization, the cultural problems, especially we English people, you know the story, forgive me for all those who are Scots, Irish and Welsh, but the story of the two Scotsmen who got washed up on a desert island, they started a bank, the two Welshmen started a choir, the two Irishmen started a fight, and the two Englishmen didn't do anything because they'd never been introduced. You know, there's something in that, in sort of English reserve, which we have to get over. And you don't really notice it until you've gone abroad and see how normal people behave. And tradition. You know, in part of the culture and part of the tradition in China at one time, they used to bind little girls' feet because they thought it looked nice. And the binding of the whole sort of thing stopped the growth. And that had to be unbound. And this is what so very often tradition has done. We have just bound and stopped growth. And all we've done is created a deformity. Now, some of that needs to be unbound to let the growth that is present actually take place. Fourthly, giving part of the hindrance is giving room to Satan. Ephesians 4:7, give no place to the devil. That doesn't mean don't give him an opportunity. He will take opportunity. It says don't give him a place. That is an actual room, an actual territory. Can I just say something here on the demonic in the first place? We're talking about spiritual warfare. I think probably in the next team bulletin, I've done an article on strongholds. Is that right? I know I've done the article, I just didn't know whether it was in the next bulletin. But, you know, a stronghold is a particular established fortress which is so situated that it guards a particular area or an important trade route. Jericho was such a place, Megiddo was another place. Okay? The fortress didn't encompass the whole, it was just a strategic, well-defended, well-fortified spot that governed the whole area. And when that stronghold came down, the whole area opened up. And we need to identify, not only in individual lives, but in corporate lives, and also out in the world, strongholds where Satan is well entrenched, where he's got hold of, and he's holding the key to the progress of a whole area. Pull that stronghold down, and a great area will be released. Okay, but read the article. But so giving room to Satan is thing, one thing. A hindrance, very real hindrance. Now, overemphasis on corporate growth will be an exaggerated subjectivism. Can't even say it. self-centeredness and a withdrawal from the world. You'll even get to a stage where you can even resent non-Christians coming. That home groups, house groups have become like this. You know. And in the end, can even resent newcomers coming into it. And I know people who said that. You know, at first they felt a bit put out. They're going, coming into our little group. What's got to happen in some of the situations, we've got to go like this. You know, see, you've got to go like this. We've still got to retain the corporateness, but somehow not the exclusiveness in the situation. Oh, that's an overemphasis. Underemphasis will be converts with little change in lifestyle, lack of discipleship and lost fruit. So in other words, you may see a great influx of people, but if there isn't attention paid to corporate growth, then there will be little change in lifestyle. And what will be happening very quickly is you'll be getting the world into the church rather than the church into the world. So that's if you underemphasize in that particular area, that's one of the things. Now, Howard Snyder, who's written New Wineskins, says this: evangelism is sharing life, and a church cannot share what it does not possess. The church must be good news before it can proclaim good news. Okay? And as I've said to our folks back in Guildford, we've got something, we may not have got enough, we certainly haven't got it all, but we've got something worth sharing. And you may not have got it all. You may not have got much, but you've got something. But the church must be good news before it can proclaim good news. So that's corporate growth. Let's go on to the final one. We go on to numerical growth, which is growth in size. And in particular, I am talking about growth by conversion, not simply transference. I think things have stabilized a little bit now in terms of transference. Okay, there have been quite a growth in what has been called the house church movement, largely by transference. That is, by people being dissatisfied where they were and coming out, right, into something which is better. Can I just make this point in passing as well? The problem with the history of man's dealing with God is this. Not that he's not been prepared to leave something that is bad for something better, but that he's been not been prepared to leave something better for what is best. Okay? The children of Egypt, the children of Israel in Egypt, were prepared to leave what was bad for something better. But where they failed was to enter in for what was best. And they were content, or I don't know if they're content, but what they happened was that they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. They knew the provision of God, the leading of God, God fighting their battles for them, etc., etc. But they never achieved God's best. They settled for the better rather than the best. And I feel that with the so-called house church movement, we're in danger of doing that. It is better than what it was. Thank God. You know, that was bad. In a lot of instances, it was bad. We got something better. But whether we got what God's best, I have my severe doubts on that. But I'm talking about growth by conversion, not transference, where transference has been the main point of growth in the house church movement at the moment. Now, if growth is going to take place, let's look at stimulus for growth, first of all. The environment, again, must be right. It must, what we're doing must be culturally relevant. And this is an aspect that people have forgotten. When people come into your fellowship, as Wagner points out in church growth and things, one of the questions that they will be asking subconsciously is, are these my kind of people? And if the answer to that is no, you've got a real block to overcome. Now, when you look at the society and take a cross-section of it, you've got this kind of shape. You've got a small sort of peer group, you know, and you've got a large working class group. That was what society was like in the days of the early church. A small peer group, the nobles, and a large group of slaves. They were the majority.
It was this.
Nobles and slaves.
Yeah. That was a group. Not many nobles, thank God, but that was a picture. Now, if you took a cross section of the church, it was exactly the same. Not many nobles, not many mighty. God has chosen the weak things of the world. The church was a reflection of society. Now, in our society today, we're still very largely there. If you take the church, you reverse it. Okay? In terms of working class, very, very small minority. In terms of the middle and upper middle class, like that. So it's a reversal of things. Have you thought about that? And what that does is reproduce its kind, and it goes on reproducing its kind. Yeah. But it's not a real reflection, and partly it's because we're not culturally relevant and we're not culturally attuned to the way that others think, act, work, behave. For example, the working class, for a better word, is more largely motivated by group pressure than individual response, and that's one of the reasons why the miners have been out on strike for 12 months. It's because their motivation is group, not individual response. And so they're motivated what the group says. And unions have worked on this, and they base their whole structure on this. Now, middle class says we're motivated by personal ambition and aspiration. And what has happened in this latest thing has been a clash between two basic ways of looking at things. And so wanting to be imposed is one man, one vote sort of situation. And that's the way that people operate. And that way for the working class is going to win every time. Because that is what motivates them. Now, if we, in the church situation, bring our middle class attitudes, a way of looking at things, approaching things, and seek to thrust it there, or if we seek to thrust it upon the smaller ethnic groups, we're gonna miss the mark every time. Every time. So, culturally relevant, love one's neighbour, stimulus for growth. That the stimulus, Paul says, the love of Christ compels us. And the stimulus for growth has got to be love for neighbour, not out of desperation or duty. We're so desperate to grow because there's hardly anybody and who's going to be able to pay the bills. So we've got to do something. Or feeling an obligation to evangelise, we've got to do it. It's got to be a basis for love. As somebody said on occasion, are you trying to convert me because you love me? Or are you loving me because you're trying to convert me? Think about it. And a house church, the difficulty of changing environment. The house church has been born out of a need to relate rather than a need to proclaim. And that's been the environment in which most of us have come into. The need for relationship in the church to find what church was really all about. That has been what we've been born into. And it's becoming very, very difficult to change the atmosphere and change the attitude. Because if your church has been into that kind of thing for more than 3 years, it will be very difficult, not impossible, but it will be difficult to change the environment to something else. Right, to change it to something which is the need to proclaim as well as the need to relate. Now, the strategy for growth, one is you'll have to change attitudes. And this is a difficult. The greatest difficulty in changing the whole thing is basically changing the whole atmosphere and the whole attitude. And that's not easy. Have to do it by teaching. You need to change structure. And you'll have to distinguish between what are essentials and what are luxuries. And you'll have to dispense with some of the luxuries in order to concentrate on the essentials. Let me give you an example of what I mean. when I was involved in leadership at Millmead and the team there, I made a count. We had a fellowship of over 600 people. And I got the staff one day to work things out of how many people were actually involved in keeping the thing going. We discovered that we had over 300 people involved in keeping the thing running. Home group leaders, Sunday school teachers, you name it. Over 300 in a membership of 600. And the 300 who were involved, of course, were the more able, more committed. So we had more people running the ship. We had so many people running the ship, we had nobody left to fire any gun. And if we were really to start firing a few guns, then we would have to begin to dismantle some of the luxuries in order to concentrate on the essentials. And you will not, believe me, you will not do it by just adding in things. Because all you'll do is produce a conflict of loyalties if you add into things. And again, this were things that we found very, very difficult in the Millmead situation. We ended up, I counted, if a person was a good Christian, not an exceptional Christian, just a good one, you went to two meetings on a Sunday, you went to fellowship thing, you went home group, and so on and so forth, you ended up by going to at least 14 or 15 things per month. 14 or 15 things per month. Now, if you were a Sunday school teacher or home group leader or anything else on top, that was extra to add in. Right? And people cannot retain a high level of commitment to those so many things. And so you get a conflict of loyalty start coming in. Right? A conflict of loyalty between family, between meeting, or what meeting the leader expects you to be at, and everything else like that. Now, if you're leaders and you're just adding things in without taking things out, that is what is going to happen. And if we're going to get involved in the Great Commission to make the gospel known, then we've got to take a serious look at what we're doing, why we're doing it, and see where we can dispense with some of the luxuries in order to concentrate on the essentials. And we will have to adopt a strategy which is consistent with the Commission. Man is at the center of the gospel, but he is not the circumference of the gospel. Okay. In other words, the gospel starts with man and his need of conversion, but it doesn't stay there. It's being part of the church, and the church is God's agent for evangelism in his work. It's God's cosmic agent. It's God's agent in this world. That God, Ephesians 3:10, that God, through the church, now is going to display his many colours, it says literally. The whole display of his colours is going to display now through the church. And the church is not some sort of emergency stopover place till we get to heaven. It is not a substitute family. It is not a substitute anything. It is unique, which God has created to be his bride. It's part of the eternal, essential purposes of God, and we've got to grasp that. And part of that is to be his agent for evangelism in the world. Now, hindrances. First of all, the social and spiritual climate in which you and I live, and we cannot avoid that. We cannot avoid the society and all that has become part of us in our society for years and years and years. And basically, we in the Western world live in a consumer society, which is basically gimme. Right? And basically, your people, that will be their kind of motivation. Gimme. And if you don't give me, I'll go somewhere where you do gimme. You know, that's the sort of thing. It is a society which talks more about its rights than its responsibilities. Women's rights, you know, men's rights, workers' rights, employers' rights. Very rarely do you hear anybody talk about what are my responsibilities. I had a young lady from the fellowship who's married and having problems in her marriage. She came to me because she wasn't happy. And she wanted to be happy. Reasonable enough. So I gave her a sheet of paper and I told her to draw a line right down the middle. And I said, on the one side, I want you to write down all your rights, all you feel you have a right to. She smiled, she said, can I have some more paper? And she started to write down all the rights. When she finished, I said, now, I want you to write down on the other side, what are your responsibilities? And that was a much shorter list. And then I said to her, which column are you living in? And she said, the rights. And I said, now you live in that other column for 2 months, then come and see me and tell me whether you're happier. Happiness is not a goal, it is a consequence. It is a consequence of living in God's fulfillment. That is fulfilling our responsibilities. But we live in a society which is not there. Okay? And there is a resistance and resentment to change. Believe it or believe it not. Man is naturally resistant to change, and the older he gets, the more resistant he gets to change. Okay? And don't fool yourself just because you've come out of something that you're not resistant to change. It doesn't take much to disturb that and to bring the resistance to change to the surface, believe you me. Teaching that is largely man needs objective rather than God and his purpose. Failure to take the commission seriously, failure to take Satan seriously in terms of spiritual warfare. Overemphasis. An overemphasis on activity. An overemphasis on activity can cover up a primary need of individual or corporate growth. Somebody who is hyperactive very often will be covering up a primary need. Okay. A church which is hyperactive can often be doing that. Incidentally, there's often a tension in Christian work. David Pawson, if you've heard him speak recently, we were chatting about it the other day, the tension between the shepherd and the fisher. And the shepherd who cares for the one, and the fisherman who the Bible talks about throwing out his dragnet and getting in all kinds. And the shepherd wants to concentrate on the individual, and the fisher wants to throw in the dragnet and do that. Now both are there in Scripture. Overemphasis on activity can cover up a primary need of individual or corporate growth. So a hyperactive person can be covering up a real need in terms of his own personal relationship and growth. He's trying to prove something. He's trying to build something. What's he trying to prove? Or corporately. Let's not look at the problems around amongst us, folks. Let's think of the world out there. And so you just sweep all the sort of problems. You don't deal with them. You sweep them under the carpet. And all you do, as Dave says, is you put them under the carpet and just make bumps for everybody else to trip over and then try to walk over the carpet. And an underemphasis of this particular aspect of growth will be stagnation, an excessive introversion, a becoming a clique, withdrawal, and ultimately you will become totally irrelevant to the world. You will exist in your small corner and you'll be doing that, and the world won't know, won't be interested at all what's happening. You're that little group over there. One of the parables of the kingdom that Jesus talked about was the yeast. Right? And the aspect of yeast in that story he told was the influence that it had on the whole. Okay? And we need to be having an influence on the whole. Right? I could go on longer than that, but I won't. What's the time? It's nearly time. I'll finish there. But what I want to do in that, and those of you who take notes, is to basically ask yourselves, where are we in all of that? Now, it may well be that, and I think you've got to be prayerful about it too, because it's very easy to hone in on one and say, oh yeah, we ought to be there. And maybe the Lord is not saying that. It said in the Bible that the men of Issachar had understanding of the times and knew what to do. When I used to read in the Authorized Version, Ephesians 5:18, which says, redeem the times, the days of evil, I thought that meant fill in all the spare time that you've got. But it doesn't mean that. It means seizing the opportune moment. It's seeing what is opportune at any given time. Right? And what you need to be doing, not only in your own individual lives, but also in your corporate fellowship, is saying, what is God's moment for us now? One of the fellowships that I was that I'm helping at Enfield, when I was up with them the other day, I was saying, what is God saying is your priority now? And they said, well, we feel it's relationships. I said, fine. Then what strategy are you adopting to ensure that that takes place? A priority. Otherwise, it's just a wish. It's just a dream. You know, So, prayerfully, in terms of your own individual lives, looking at those three areas, because all those things are essential if growth is going to take place, ask the Lord, now, Lord, where do you want us to concentrate? And then look at your situation. I hope that enables you to be able to ask the right kind of questions. Mm-hmm.